This episode of The Beautiful Struggle is brought to you by Bear Fruit, a Philadelphia-based lifestyle brand dedicated to turning beliefs into creative action and inspiring others to do the same. Head over to Bear Fruit, that's B3ARFRUIT.com, and sign up for our newsletter. While you're there, check out our other podcast, Comic Book Junto, a weekly podcast about all things geek culture hosted by me, Octavius A. Newman, and my co-host and good friend, Adam J. Teteris. And don't forget to grab some merch from our online store. As a reward for being a loyal, Beautiful Struggle listener, use code TBS to get 10% off your next order. Bear Fruit. Believe. Create. Inspire. Now let's start the show. Hello and welcome to the Beautiful Struggle Podcast, episode 12. I'm your host, Octavius A. Newman. I'm the founder of Bear Fruit. And I am here with Jeff Sheldon, owner, creator of Ugg Monk. What's up, man?
How's it going?
You know, I'm living over here in Philly. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing my thing.
Nice.
Running my mouth as usual. Yeah, so those of you guys listening that know about this podcast already, those of you that don't know about this podcast already, the whole point of this podcast is to really share people's creative origin story. I believe if you can highlight the beauty and the struggle of the creative process, you can inspire people to participate as well. It's not just something that you sit back, fold your arms, and have an opinion and like or don't like. What I want to do is I want to kind of get beyond that kind of superhero perspective of this finished product, like this guy's just done and complete and he's perfect. But I'd like to kind of go back in time and kind of go and see how we got to be where we are and kind of dig deep a little bit. So, Jeff, are you down for this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So, Jeff, for those who don't know who you are, those who don't know what Ugg Monk is, those who are like, who's this guy and what is the name of this company this guy keeps saying, let people kind of know who you are and what we're talking about.
Cool. Yeah, I'll start kind of at the beginning and give you a high level condensed version. So back seven and a half years ago, I was graduating college, studying design, doing all sorts of art and traditional art up until that point. Kind of transitioned into graphic design, fell in love with typography and just the whole world of design that I didn't really even know was out there, and started basically entering these t-shirt competitions online, which was Threadless and Designed by Humans and other sites where you could submit your art, people vote on it, and then if you get selected or they curate or they select the top ones, they print your shirts and they give you a cash prize. And this was, you know, back in college, and it was like, hey, why not? I'm having fun learning design, just trying different things, getting into. I'd never designed a t-shirt before that.
Now, Jeff, if you don't mind,
like a fashion background.
If you don't mind sharing, what year was this year in college? If you don't want to tell your business, I understand, but you know.
This was my senior year in college that I got really into this. So I had been doing quite a bit of design, maybe my junior year, I'd been doing quite a bit of design up until that point, just on my own, you know, class projects, even taking on freelance stuff, just self-initiated things. And it's just something that pours out of me. Like the artistic passion has always been in me. So it's like, it was not just when school was done, you know, the college class, the books are closed. I wanted to keep designing. So I was just doing all of this kind of stuff, like constantly learning and getting better at learning the tools and just reading up on things. So, so that I started entering these competitions, and then, for whatever reason, I did really well, after a couple tries, and they printed my shirt. I got the shirt and was completely stoked. I was like, you know, I had this amazingly beautifully printed screen printed shirt. They gave you a cash prize that was, I think it was like $500.
Big money.
Yeah, I was like jackpot, you know?
And for a college student, you're like, all the ramen.
This is crazy. Yeah, I can eat out every single day. No, but it was just kind of like, I guess, and that kind of clicked. And I never thought of myself as like a fashion designer or apparel designer.
Right.
It was just something that I was applying the design that I was doing on the side and kind of putting it out there for people to see. And this was the first time I'd ever done that, which can be a scary thing because, you know, people are going to critique it or say, hey, that's so easy. I can do it. It's so simple.
Yeah. There's all kinds of anxiety that goes through you when you take the plunge of going, I'm going to do this thing, you know, especially like, what are people going to say? Or what are people going to think?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think even still 7.5 years later, I still get that some of those fears. And there's things like when I release something, sure, I know that I have a captive audience and I've built a lot of trust with my customers and followers, but there's still the doubt that can creep in. Like, what if this is a complete bomb? Like, what if this is a failure? What if, you know, people, they're going to say nasty things about it because they like, you know, just a whole online community, or what if it's just a flop? So I think that that's something that never quite leaves any creative in any field, you know, any musician, any artist. So
I can agree. I can totally agree. There's, as cool as you want to seem, as cool as I want to seem, and as confident as I want to seem, at the end of the day, you're like, please like me. Please like me. You know what I'm saying? It's like I don't care if you like me, but it'd be cool if you like me. You know what I mean? At the same time.
So yeah, like I think that that was the first time I had done, you know, really publicly tried to self-promote myself, and which feels weird as a, and as a creative, none of us like to talk about ourselves or show people our work, but there comes to a point where like, hey, if you want people to see it, unless you're Kanye, then you're, you know, you have no problem with that.
Right.
But for me as like a, you know, still learning the ropes of design, I didn't know too much about it, but when I started to see that, like even that small response, you know, this is nothing huge, nobody knew my name, that people liked what I was doing. It was like, it just, that was the fuel. That was the spark that made me be like, I want to do more of this. Like, this is that process of creating, getting feedback, seeing people buy what I'm creating was a really rewarding process. And that's, you know, what kept that desire inside of me.
But the fear didn't go away.
No, for sure. I mean, it wasn't like I had conquered the world and now I know that I could just put things out. I could design whatever I wanted and people would like it. It was definitely not that.
What made you decide to move? Because I mean, there's someone that could be listening and go, yeah, me too, Jeff. You know, I'm terrified. I've had some success, but I'm still scared. You know, what makes you decide to move forward? Because you could totally be, you could totally not do that, but you chose to move forward. What was the deciding factor?
Yeah, I don't know that I can pinpoint like one characteristic that made me do it other than, you know, when you ship something, when you, you know, put that final stamp on something, and artwork is hard because art is really technically never finished. There's never like a
great point.
You never feel like you're done with it. And that's a struggle of every artist. You're never completely satisfied after you record a song. You're like, well, we could probably do that one section, you know, 1,000 times over and over.
Right. But
there was something that like triggered when I started putting things out there, or, you know, even class assignments, you know, you have a deadline, you have a client deadline or whatever, you had to finish it. And I would work as hard as I possibly could to get that to a point where I was happy to have my name on it and proud that if I had to get up in front of the class or if I had to present to a client, that I would be, you know, proud of my work.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't get to that point. They get to a point where they get frustrated and they say, you know, this is due Friday. You know, I've put a lot of time into it. I'm just going to settle for what I have. It's good, but, and hopefully nobody knows I did this, you know, like, cause they don't want to put their name.
Right. Hopefully nobody can track this back to me.
Exactly. So it's kind of cliche to say, but it's the last 10%. It's like pushing through to make something where you can say, you know what? I would be happy standing on stage with this, you know, next to me and saying, this is what I did.
Right.
Whether, you know, people will still critique it. There's nothing is perfect. But pushing yourself to the point where you're like, finally, like I can see that as a printed piece and put my name with it. There's a difference that people don't, you know, I think a lot of times get caught up in that last hurdle or the final stretch where it's like, you know, and they give up or they just don't end up producing whatever they're working on.
Yeah. I think there's a level that you're pointing out that really resonates with me that says you can't find a place where you're quote safe. There's no safe zone. Nobody can say anything to me. Nobody can criticize me. Nobody can tell me that I could have done that better or it just sucks. There's no such place.
Mm-hmm.
There's a level to where you have to have a standard within yourself, your circle of influence, your creative peers, or whoever your counsel is to be able to go, all right, I know this has flaws. I know this could be better. I know this isn't perfect, but I think there's a level to where creatives have to acknowledge their limitations. Like, I mean, regardless of what you believe, you're not God. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The only one who can produce perfection is God. Mm-hmm. So since we are not that, is we can do really cool things, but there's a limit. And that, people criticize God. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, why wouldn't they criticize you? So I think there's almost a way to kind of like, you know, be kind to yourself and understand that, you know, even on your best day, somebody's going to have something to say.
Yeah. And I think as creatives, we struggle because we look at our past work and we said, oh man, you know, we cringe. It's like, I could have done that so much better. But part of what is being a creative or what's being successful in my eyes is that you can see that you could have gotten better. You're seeing that improvement. Like it's a constant stream of improvement and it's not, you know, it's not just you've arrived and now you can just turn into a machine and you just crank out stuff. Like, I think everyone goes through phases and it's not an objective thing. What's good and what's bad when it comes to art. But I think for yourself and seeing yourself progress and you're seeing your talents get better, you know, refining my eye, the way I see things now, the details that I'm picking up, I didn't pick up on 7 years ago or, you know, 15 years ago as a kid, I didn't realize, you know, like,
right.
So I think there's part of that journey is there's no beginning and end as far as like skill set or how good you get. And I keep comparing this to music because I feel like it's very similar where you start off and you think, you know, you might be a great musician or you have a hit record. And then as you're going along, you're the phases that you go through, you're refining, you're getting better, and you're slowly like kind of maturing as a creative.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? You mentioned having a hit record. Sometimes that can be the most discouraging. Like, in the sense of you have a hit record or you have a hit piece, you have that thing that everybody's like, oh my gosh, you're amazing. And then you go, yeah, check this new thing out. Crickets.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I thought you guys said I was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like your value has been directly associated with what the crowd is saying at the moment. And there's a saying that I heard, actually, I don't know if you're familiar, or those listening are familiar with Charlemagne the God. He says his dad told him, you're never as good as they say you are, and you're never as bad as they say you are, you know, which is a, you know, because it's possible. I mean, I know for me, there's stuff that I've done that I'm like, you guys like that? Really? Oh, I wasn't really into that, you know, and I try to hit him with this thing and they go, love this. And they're just like, eh, I'm like, you know, that's a part of it. You have to kind of learn as you go.
For sure. Yeah. And I think kind of going up, moving along my story a little bit, you know, people see where I'm at now, 7 years later. We haven't even really jumped into what Ugmonk is now, but they see the success of Ugmonk, or they see maybe the notoriety or the, you know, the features on blogs and different things that I've been written up on. And they're like, I want that. You know, when was your big breaking point? When was the turning point? What was the thing that you did that tipped the scales and now you're just a huge success?
Right.
And I don't have a great answer. I mean, there's certain things along the lines that helped and certain shirts that stood out and got noticed on design blogs. But I call it the 7-year overnight success because there's nothing like drastic that I did that was like, that put me on the map.
Jeff, say that again for the internet, for those who just took a sip of coffee or whose significant other was talking to them and missed that. Because that's huge.
Yeah, I think when people look at me and they see the success that I have now and they want to replicate that and they want to replicate it tomorrow, looking for that key magical moment, there isn't one. What I'm doing now is the 7-year overnight success. 7 years of being consistent, putting in the grind, just putting out, you know, being more and more products, being really consistent, building on what I've done, refining the brand, and just all of those little pieces added together, that's the success. Like, that's the magic moment, which is not a moment. It's not getting, you know, on a national news segment somewhere where everyone all of a sudden falls in love with me. So it's
right.
I mean, there's a lot of things that go into what creates that long-term success. But one of the most common questions I get asked is like, what was that thing that you did? Like, what can I do like you did to make the hockey stick growth where all of a sudden you go from unknown to well-known and all over the internet, and you can't manufacture that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hard. That's a hard word to hear, you know, because I think that there's a piece where certain aspects of pop culture kind of let on or promise that you can manufacture that. You know, like, you know what? If you just do, we see it all the time. All you have to do is this, that, and the other thing to get a body like this, you know, or just do this, this, and that, and then you'll have that. And it's like, the truth of the matter is you don't know anything. Nothing is promised. The only thing that you have control of is you. All you can do is take your convictions, turn them into action intentionally. That's all you can do, you know, and write your plans in pencil and keep an eraser near so you can continue to edit them as you move forward. But, you know, but we, one thing that I have seen and something you touched on is good things come to those that hustle. You know, it seems that people who consistently show up over and over and over again and are dedicated and committed in word and their actions, they tend to be the ones who do well. It doesn't promise you or guarantee anything, but that's kind of a common denominator among successful people.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's like one of the best examples of this, or the things I like to relate to when I'm trying to get this point across, is the creators of Angry Birds, the, you know, the iPhone app that took the world by storm for a year or two. And everywhere you went, it was Angry Birds, everything. And it's like, oh, I just got to create this game. I create a game like Angry Birds. It's so simple. Right. I can do this. Well, that was like their 52nd or 54th game that this company had created. Yeah. And the first 50 of them were complete failures. You know, they're not doing, they didn't do anything. So people don't necessarily look at those first 50 tries that might've had a little bit of success or just been complete failures. Right. They see 54 and they're like, I want that, you know, they're not 54. Willing to put in the 53 times of like trying, failing, or trying, maybe not even failing, just never getting noticed or never catching on.
Right.
So that's, you know, you don't see the early days of athletes when they were just in the gym when everyone left after practice shooting free throws. You know, you look at Steph Curry and these guys now, they're like, oh man. And then you see their workout routines when nobody was talking about them, when their whole team was left and had gone out to party, they're still in the, you know, shooting three free throws or working on different skills. That's what really separates people. And you're never going to get noticed for that. You're going to get noticed for what, you know, what the output of that is.
Yeah. You're not going to get noticed for doing the hard work. You're going to get noticed for what the hard work produces. Mm-hmm. It's funny. Like you mentioned Steph Curry, you mentioned athletes. That's one of the things that I think is really easy for us to look at and go, ooh, how can I be like you? And when that person kind of maybe stiff arms you and kind of goes, hold up, let me break down what this actually is. You have a lot of people go, oh, nah, I'm good. Never mind.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to waste your time. I didn't really mean, like, I don't, and I mean, even like I've been overweight the majority of my life, even though I've been active, I've been overweight the large majority of my life. And recently over the past 3-4 years, I started doing CrossFit, doing Olympic weightlifting and stuff like that. And I've lost a lot of weight, put on a lot of muscle. I've had a very big, you know, physical change. And I've had people go, yo, I want a da 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 da. And then I start to explain to them and they're like, how much does it weigh? Nah, I'm good. It don't take. And then they want to tell me what it doesn't take. Mm-hmm. And then they want to tell me what they don't have to do. And then they want to tell me about their friend who did it easier. And it's kind of like, okay, I mean, that's fine. You don't have to do what I'm doing, but you asked me what I did. And it doesn't kind of tickle your fancy to hear it's really, really, really hard work.
Yeah. And I say this not to glorify myself or make myself look like, hey, I'm doing everything right. But there's so many days or like so many Friday nights or weekends, especially early on, like work when I was still working full time and doing Ugg Monk in the weekends and evenings, like everyone else is out to dinner on Friday nights. And, you know, my wife and I are packing shirts and writing out customs forms and shipping labels and counting inventory, which like sounds kind of glamorous until you're like an hour in, you're like, this is not fun at all. This is real work, answering customer service emails, doing, you know, labeling things and just going through like the actual business side of it. But people only, you know, you only get to see an athlete when they perform on the court for that, you know, 1 hour, 2 hours of time.
Yeah.
And you only, you know, you only read about people in these Inc. magazine and the success they've had, but you don't actually see the 18 years that led up to that. And if you're not willing to put in that 18 years or whatever the amount of time it takes to get to a successful point for your business or your brand or yourself, then that's where people really drop off and they're like, okay, fine, I'll take the 9-to-5 job.
Yeah. And that's what I'm hoping this podcast actually does. I mean, that really is my heart, because as I was sharing with you offline, these are the conversations that I hear behind closed doors. This is the stuff that helps me understand and have perspective and kind of go, oh, this is what it means to be a creative entrepreneur. You know, it's not just the finished product. It's not just, how do I make a website like yours, Jeff? How do I make hats like yours, Jeff? How do I make this like yours, Jeff? How do I get people to buy stuff like this, Jeff? How do I, you know, and I'm going to tell you, I'm not even going to lie to you, internet. I have been that guy. I've been the, how do I do what you do guy?
Mm-hmm.
That's what, how do you, that's why I'm doing this podcast, because those guys would stiff arm me and go, hold up, kid. First of all, you got it all wrong. You know how long this took me? It took me, and they almost got an attitude. Like, they're almost kind of upset that I think it's something that I can just kind of, they can just package up, put a bow on, and hand over to me. You know? And if they could, why would they do that? So, it is, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, you know, a big, and especially in the society we live in now on the internet, we get to see all the good, or all the good and the bad, but we get to see it all condensed. You know, we digest it through Twitter, through Facebook, whatever, through Instagram, and we see someone that has 400,000 followers on Instagram. We're like, oh man, I could do what they're doing. And you're seeing, like, we get to see the best parts of everyone's life for a good reason. We don't want to necessarily air all our dirty laundry and show people that are bad stuff.
Right.
But when we digest all of that and we look at cumulative, we want all of it. We want to be a great photographer, a great musician, a great artist, a great designer. And then we realize, well, each one of these people that's successful is usually only good at one of those. And they've also worked their way to get that. So we can't be everything to everyone.
Jeff, you know what? You're a smart guy. You know, Jeff, you're on your way.
I'm good at faking it. I'm good at faking it.
I don't know where you're going, but you're on your way. Because that's a really insightful point about how I get... Look, I can relate. I'm the kind of guy who... That's where Believe, Create, Inspire came from. You take what you believe, you create something, you inspire your circle of influence. Because I want to participate. I want to create. I don't want to just consume. I want to get in there too. I hear someone playing the piano. What do I want to do? Oh man, I want to play the piano, you know? But again, you start to recognize your limitations and go, you can't do everything excellently. You just can't. Mm-hmm. You can't do everything excellently. You have to pick something, you know? Have you ever seen Jiro Dreams of Sushi?
Yes. Yeah, it's fantastic.
So that documentary on Netflix, check it out, guys, if you haven't seen it. This guy, Jiro, he makes sushi. Now you might go, so I can get sushi from down the corner. Nah, he makes sushi in a very, it's like a 1 year wait?
Yeah. It's
to get a reservation?
Get in there. Yeah.
Their interns make rice for like what, 10 years or something? Like, no, like the first couple of years, they just make rice.
Yeah, they can't even touch anything else.
All they can do is make rice. He says to his interns, if you're not ready to make a 10-year commitment, don't even waste my time. Now, you might hear that and go, whoa, that's really harsh. That's really rough. But like, that's what it takes to be the best person doing sushi. But also, the interesting thing is, all he does is make sushi.
Mm-hmm.
So much so, now this is something that we can learn, he doesn't have the greatest relationship with his sons either, you know? So we don't want our creativity and our work to kind of like become our God. That's not what we want. But I think there is something that can be gleaned and learned that says, why not focus your energy, you know, on something and try to become undeniably excellent at that thing? You know, and understand that you can't be, you know, there are some unique people who can be great at a bunch of different things, but they probably started before you, or they're just blessed to have unique talent.
Right.
But yeah, focusing your energy, I think, is a huge point.
Yeah. And I think focus, that word focus, is something that's really lost. I mean, we use it all the time, but in the generation, the society, the culture we live in, focus means like, okay, I focused. I sat down for 5 whole minutes and read something. Like, that's not right, focus, right. You know, like focus, the actual art or the dedication of what focus entails is something much deeper and much more committed, where you're not just saying, what, I read a, you know, a business blog every day for a week. Now my business should be doing better. It's like, that's not focusing. Focusing is getting into the nitty gritty of the craft of it and like spending your entire effort and being focusing on something, one thing or two things, until you get those, you know, you learn those skills or you've perfected those talents, But not necessarily just focusing isn't just like, oh, like I shut down, you know, I didn't get on social media for a day. I was so focused. That's not focused. That's just not being distracted. And, you know, I can say that from a guy who's as distracted as the next person and as feels as ADD and all over the place as anyone else.
That's a great point. You made a distinction between being focused and not being distracted. Can you unpack that a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm as distracted. I get distracted so often. So I'm definitely, you know, preaching to myself here. But when we feel like we've accomplished something, or we crossed off 3 out of the 5 things on our to-do list. We're like, man, I was so focused today. It's like, well, not really. We just were able to not be distracted by other things, or we were able to say no to 10 other things, or the interruptions, or the opportunities that seemed good, and as opposed to, you know, if we're jumping at everything saying, yes, I want to do that. Yes, I want to meet you for lunch. Yes, I want to do this speaking engagement. Yes, I want to do that. Like, all of a sudden, those are all great things, but you're being distracted away from the one thing that you need to be focused on. So for me, focusing is on building and designing new products and building out the UGMonk brand. It's hard because we have technology in our pocket and we can pull out and get distracted and lose focus. And I do it every day, you know, so I'm the worst offender of it. But to really get in the zone of what focus means, it's a much longer timeline than just what we see snippets of, like, hey, this month I'm going to focus on this.
Sure. It seems like there's a dedication involved more so than, it's like saying, you want to come play basketball? Yes. You want to be part of this basketball league? Whoa, you mean I got to come every week for how long? I got to do this. That's 2 different things. Mm-hmm. Like showing up once and being dedicated is different. So one of the things that I do, I consider myself a nerd. I consider myself a geek. And one of the things that the nerd community does, I think, is they dive headlong into things. So you can be a, you know, car nerd. You know, you can be a comic book nerd. You can be a blah, blah, blah nerd. So I kind of call that steeping. Like, so for me, whenever I get into something, I just steep myself in it. So the term steeping to me comes from tea. So if you take a tea bag, and if you've ever seen somebody take a tea bag, they have the hot water and they just kind of like dunk it back. They kind of dunk just to kind of get the color out. It's almost like it's, I can say that I did it. But what I learned is if you're really trying to make tea, what you do is you just sit it in there and leave it alone and walk away for a period of time. And then you come back and then all of the flavor and all of the different stuff that's in that bag has now steeped and seeped into the water. So when I get into something, I kind of just steep myself in it without any expectations. You know, and I just sit there. I look at it. I Google it. I research it. I read articles on it. I listen to podcasts on it. I ask questions. I have dialogues, conversations, arguments. I mean, I just dig in. And then after a while, you pick your head up and you go, oh my gosh, I actually am pretty good at this. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, I know how to do this. Or, you know, I have an idea. But it's kind of that patience that says, I'm not going to force creativity in this thing. I'm going to be a participant. You know, just for the sake of enjoying what I'm doing. I'm not doing this so that I can do something else. Does that make sense? Or did I just ramble forever?
Yeah, I think, no, that's a key thing, is that there's a difference between being proactive and self-initiated and pushing yourself to be steeped into something, to absorb everything, rather than, hey, boss, what do you want me to do? And then do the minimum amount. Hey, I read the manual. Here it is. It's like, there's a, you know, you have to, it has to come from inside you. That drive and that passion has to come from inside you to want to learn something, that you're actually learning it. You know, the same way that, like, in school, there's plenty of classes where I did not learn anything. Sure, I got a passing grade. I did fine, did well on the
great
test.
Great point.
I did not learn it. I, you know, I memorized some facts, or I did the least that I had to do. But then there was design classes where I was steeped. You know, I was so far, I was doing way too much work for them, above and beyond what we even need to do. But I got so engaged and interested, and I just wanted it. And that's the difference. Like, you can't teach somebody necessarily that desire. You know, you'll find what you're passionate about by what you end up getting completely absorbed into.
That's an interesting point that you say, that you can't teach it. Because I think it can be frustrating when you look at other people and they don't get it, or they don't get what you get the way you get it, or they're not into their thing the way you're into your thing. And you can kind of be like, why are you, how come you're just so, you want to call them names. You want to call them lazy. You want to call, you're not really committed. You're not into this. Da, 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 da. But you can also kind of lose track of the fact that, wait a minute, I was that guy or girl a little while ago, or I am that guy or girl about this thing over here. And if you're married, you understand what I'm talking about. There's stuff that your significant other is not as into as you are. It's not a big deal to them, but it's a huge deal to you. But it's funny. That's something that people kind of have to come to on their own journey. If someone, I'm just trying to, sometimes I try to put myself in the shoes of the person listening, because I know for me, I like to ask a lot of questions. If someone at home is listening and going, yeah, Jeff, I hear that, but you said I'll know. How will I know that I know?
Yeah, that's a real tough, I don't think there's a great answer. One thing that's going to, all of a sudden you see the flag pop up and you're like, oh, now I know. But I think a lot of it, you know, you could call it self-discovery, you could call it just exploration, whatever it is, but there's almost everyone, you know, personalities are different, but almost everyone has something that if they, you know, didn't have a job and they had all the money in the world, they would just go, they would jump in the deep end and go all in on. It could be cars, it could be art, it could be music, it could be sports. But there's something that, you know, or food or cooking, whatever, like people, they gravitate towards it and they're always kind of like interested in it, but they've never let themselves go all the way in. So like, you know, someone that's always interested in cooking, they never thought of like actually writing a cookbook or opening a restaurant because, well, you know, I have a full-time job. I'm not going to actually like pursue that. And I think part of it is just allowing yourself to pursue the thing that you really feel that passion and that interest in, the thing that like you would work 80 hours on a week, sure, if you had 80 hours, because you're just so interested in it and you want to learn everything about everything that's involved with that. And not everyone is self-motivated or driven, but I think being, even hearing conversations like this or being around people, reading stories of people that have pursued that, kind of lights the fire under them to be like, oh, I got to find, you know, whatever that thing is. It could be something mundane that seems like, you know, you're into gardening or knitting or whatever, but you could go completely all in and be the best at that one thing if you just allow yourself to explore it.
Or you could innovate that thing, or you could fix a problem with that thing, or you could, you know, like there's all kinds of ways. Because I think what's interesting is we're taught to be, I'm trying not to go on a tangent here. We get taught to be like worker bees. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I would like to not just be a consumer, but a producer. Like, what can I add? How can I add value to this particular thing? So that's one of the things that I would encourage people to think about. Like, when you walk up to this thing that you love, for example, if you see a problem, maybe you're the one that's supposed to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. You know? If something annoys you, maybe you're supposed to create something that makes it not so annoying. You get what I'm trying to say? If you love something and you always want to talk about it and people are like, oh my gosh, shut up. You're always talking about that. You know, nobody cares about that but you. It's like, well, those are some of the things that we kind of get taught to just stop, shut up, fall in line. Mm-hmm. But I would say maybe that's something tugging at you that's saying you're supposed to be the one to do this. We see this in movies all the time, you know, you're the one. And I'm not saying like you have to do it by yourself, but I would just encourage people to kind of maybe look at things a little bit differently and kind of say, well, maybe I'm supposed to change this, or, you know, add something to this, or remove something from this, or innovate this, or, you know, because I think that's how we move forward.
Yeah, and challenging the norm, like the societal norms that you go, you know, you go to school, then you go to college, you get a degree, you get a steady job, you get married, you buy a house. Like that's presented to us as what you do. It's kind of the only option given. And if you do anything else, or maybe, you know, maybe you are a one-hit wonder and you make big in you know, in a movie or whatever, but
I'm still waiting to hit it big, Jeff.
Yeah, I think we all are.
You know,
we're waiting to win the lottery without even playing it, is what they always say.
Got to buy a ticket, though.
Yeah. But, you know, I think we're not really taught, at least in the U.S. society until now, where like entrepreneurship and things like that are being encouraged. And there's shows like Shark Tank that are encouraging people to think about their ideas and start their own businesses. But basically, that used to be only for the weirdos or the people who couldn't cut it in regular business because they were, you know, they couldn't get along with people. And we're not really given the opportunity to say, like, actually, you know, you don't have to go to college or you don't have to go work for someone. You can take, if you want a better, whatever, a better chef's knife, you want to create the best knife out there because there's nothing that fits what you need. Go out there and make it and, you know, team up with great people who understand how to do the manufacturing and all that stuff. But like, we weren't really encouraged to do that. We were encouraged to get a steady paycheck and make sure, you know, you don't go too close to the edge and you don't want to get, you know, too dangerous in life.
Right.
Just live kind of a consistent, boring life. And now it's like people are realizing that there's a lot more opportunity. And especially because the internet has opened up so many doors and given us so much more information and we're exposed to more, that you realize, hey, I can do really anything, anything that I want. Maybe it means on the side at first, but you're allowed to find those problems and fix them and not just have to sit back and be a cog in the machine.
Yeah, I think we can do anything. We have options. I think the thing now is we need to learn the method of operation because we've learned how to be employees, but we haven't learned how to be entrepreneurs. And I think that is something I learned myself. Being an entrepreneur and living an entrepreneurial lifestyle is a skill almost.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because we've all been taught to just work and then clock out and then work and then clock out. And then we look over here and we go, look what they've got. I want that. But we bring the work and clock out mentality to it and it doesn't work. And we're confused because no one's actually taught us. No. We don't work and clock out here. Mm-hmm. We do things different. We had the mentality of, what do you want me to do? I've done the thing you want me to do. Give me my check.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, when you're an entrepreneur, it's like, I have to think for other people. I have to think beyond other people. I got to fix problems that no one even cares about ahead of time so that when they come to the problem, they go, I already fixed it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's really different. And I've really found a lot of kind of like mentors from a distance through podcasts and books and stuff like that, that have really, really, really been helpful. So I would say if you are trying to find that thing that's, you know, that you're going to steep yourself into, try to get an education from people who are already doing what you want to do through books, through podcasts, through articles, through conferences and stuff like that. It's kind of like you have to really ask yourself, is the education I'm getting in college taking me further away or closer to what I really want to do? You know, or I don't know. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think you hit on a key thing with the employee versus entrepreneur mindset where, and I would even back up and say, some people are better at being employees their entire life. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, right? Like some people need that structure in the system and they are excellent and they can excel at what they do at sales, at whatever, you know, accounting. Their mind works that way. They're good, like receiving instructions, executing tasks and doing things. But when you try and transition from, you know, hey boss, what do you want me to do next? And he has to give you a list of three things to, hey, I found out three ways to make our company more efficient or to improve our marketing or improve our design. That's a completely, you know, that's 180 degrees different because you're going after certain things when you're an entrepreneur and seizing things that other people don't see. Whereas an employee is, you know, is more kind of taking those instructions, looking at them, and then hopefully performing them to the best that they possibly can.
Another point that you brought up, because that's great, is that if you're an entrepreneurial type person, you might not fit in a regular job. That's me. Like I have tried. I'm telling you, my wife is like, Octavius, you just don't fit. Like, you know, because you might be the guy that where the boss goes, I need you to do thing one, two, and three. And then you go, why are we doing three when we could be doing four, five, and six? And matter of fact, why are we doing this at all? You know what you should do? You should do so and so and so. And they go, shut up. Just do what we said do. And you're like, yeah, I know you want me to do that. But why do you want me to do that if we could do this? If we could, you know what that sounds like? A guy who should probably run their own thing. You know what I'm saying? Because even if you bring that mentality that Jeff is explaining to the wrong environment, you are like a virus that's got to go. Like, they got to get you out of here because you're disrupting everything. You're always asking questions. You're always trying to change everything. You're coming across arrogant. Maybe you are arrogant. I am arrogant sometimes. Coming off like a jerk. Maybe you are a jerk. I am a jerk sometimes. But the thing is, you have to find out where you fit. And everybody's not an employee. Everybody doesn't have to be an employee at all times. Now, you might have to be an employee to get things done while you set your other situation up. And Jeff, that's kind of what you did as you were building UGMonk, right?
Yeah. So jumping kind of back into my story a little bit, we were, you know, I was talking about the competitions that I had won back in college. And then right out of college, I got married and got my first design job at an agency and was a junior level designer, you know, doing kind of the grunt work and, you know, the Photoshop, cloning out logos and photos and not necessarily the most creative things. But I was, you know, fresh out of college, like, hey, I want to design the world. I want to, you know, keep doing this. I'm doing this t-shirt stuff on the side. It's really fun. So since I wasn't finding necessarily the full creative fulfillment through my day job, although I was learning and gleaning so much information there, that's when I got the idea to, hey, maybe I should start my own thing. Maybe instead of, you know, doing these contests where they basically buy your artwork and I can no longer do anything with that, what if I just did my own thing and printed up a few shirts and put up a website and tried selling them? And that was like, that was my entire business plan. I had no idea of what it was going to lead to other than, I have this creative passion. I think there's an outlet for selling the things that I'm making similar to the contest, and let's go for it. And that's when I launched UGMonk back in 2008. So pretty much right alongside of starting the new job a few months in, I launched this thing, which I didn't even call a business at the time because it was not a business. It was just like me designing a few shirts. And then it kind of snowballed over the course of the next few years into something bigger. But I was still working, paying the bills, you know, 9 to 5, I was working at the agency, learning and doing things there. So it wasn't like I just jumped out of college and was like, hey, I'm going to start my own business. I know everything about everything. And, you know, here we go.
Now, what does UGMonk mean?
That goes back to my having no idea what I was doing, having no plan, no business plan. I had basically designed the first 4 designs that I wanted to make shirts, get shirts printed up and sold and sell them, and had designed a very basic website, which looking back, it was, you know, pretty horrible. But then I got to the point, I was like talking to my brother, who's a web developer, and he was designing the site. We're like, we need to call this something. Like, we didn't even think about like naming it or filing a copyright or anything. And we're trying to come up with all these funny names and clever names about t-shirt and designer and, you know, just kind of going through all these word games, but not, we weren't planning it. Like, we weren't sitting there planning, like, here's the next huge company that we're thinking
right.
about.
It wasn't like you weren't like supervillains going, your master plan.
Not at all. Not at all. We were just kind of like, just going back and forth. So we started making a list of words, and everything was just so, we were trying too hard, and we were throwing out words that were just made up or inside jokes. And UGMonk is one of those where we just threw it out. And we're like, hey, that'd be funny. Haha. And then we like looked up on Google to see if anyone had the URL, and it was open, which is rare to have like a 5-letter, you know, or a 5-6-letter open URL. And, so we just grabbed it and we're like, yeah, we could do that. And then I like designed a logo and went for it. But that was like, There was no other results in Google. There was like 1 or 2 results that were from another language. And now if you Google the word UGMonk, there's like, I don't know, 40,000, 60,000 results. It depends on Google's algorithm.
Wow.
That all go back to the word UGMonk. And we got to create what UGMonk was.
So UGMonk means nothing?
No, the actual origin of the word is an inside joke, but we haven't actually like revealed where that came from. It basically doesn't mean anything. We just went for it and defined what it was as far as the making a brand out of a word, kind of like Google wasn't anything until Google defined it.
Got it. Got it. Awesome. Yeah, that's an awesome story. That's funny.
So maybe one day we'll reveal like that really terrible, not that creative inside joke. We just, it's funny to look at it now and like, you know, to have a corporation filed as UGMonk Inc. and all of these things where we weren't really you know, had I gone back and thought it over more that I'd be doing this 7 years later, I probably would have called it something else, but it's actually played to our strengths, and it's weird enough that people remember it and short enough that you can go right to the URL.
Yeah. That's awesome. So you're doing this while you're working, right? And in the process, is everything going smoothly? Everything's going exactly where you want it to, or are you kind of just floundering and figuring it out as you go along?
Yeah, so it went as smooth, I guess, as I could have hoped. I didn't know if I'd ever, I bought 200 shirts. So it was 50 of four different designs. And I didn't know if I'd take a year to sell those, if I'd take 2 years, if I'd ever sell them. I had never sold anything online, never shipped anything internationally, like didn't really know what to expect. But I used some of the connections that I had on the t-shirt sites and the t-shirt blogs to kind of say, hey, look, I started my own little shop, and just reached out to people to say, you know, check out my stuff, see what you think, and reached out to some design blogs and typography blogs, and got posted on a few. And this is super, super small. This is, you know, before social media was even really a thing, and saw a few orders start to come in. And by a few, I mean, like literally a few. But when I got those orders, it was like, whoa, I'm actually selling something that I created to another human somewhere around the globe that I'm shipping, and they're buying, you know, they're paying their hard earned money. And it was a pretty crazy first experience, just to feel that. And then that's what kind of motivated me to keep going and, you know, putting out some more shirts and reaching out to more people, doing some of that self promotion, the stuff that we were talking about earlier, just putting yourself out there saying, hey, this is what I did. If you like it, you know, they're available for sale here. It wasn't saying this is the best t-shirts ever, these are going to change your life. It was literally just like, I think this aesthetic and this minimal design could connect with other people with the same taste that I had.
Yeah. Now you talk about the aesthetic, you talk about minimal design a little bit. Tell me a little bit more about how you decided to on the look that UGG Monk is right now.
It's all stemmed from just my personal taste and personal want for what the brand is, which could be, you know, that's kind of, it could be a scary place to go if you're only basing things off of what you want for yourself and nobody else wants it. But I realized early on that I tapped into something that was very different from what was out there at the time. You know, we're talking the crazy, you know, tattoo looking shirts with dragons and flames and, you know, shredded sleeves on them.
Right.
It was just like over the top and neon colors and paint splatters. And like what I was putting out there was like really clean, simple, giant letters and numbers and real bold shapes that were so different. But I would have bought those if I saw them in a shop. If I, you know, next, and if that was next to a rack of all the rest of the shirts, I would have gravitated towards those. And it's always come from like what I connect with, you know, just my personal lifestyle. I love simplicity. I love that minimalism. Harkens back to a lot of the classic designers before even, you know, computers and digital design was around. And there's something that's just so, I don't know, I have a connection with it that it's what I like. And it comes out of me, like the way I see the world. And it connects with people that also like it.
So you basically made the stuff you wanted to see.
Yeah, exactly.
That's dope. I think that's fresh. I mean, I think that's going to like hopefully encourage some people to determine where they should start. Cause I know there are a lot of people who are thinking about music, film making, writing. What should I write about? What should I draw? What should I, you know, draw what you want to see? What would you want to consume? What would you want to purchase? What's missing? You know? Cause again, I think people are trying to find that. How can I not miss? How can I guarantee a win? You can't, but what you can do is be genuine. What you can do is be honest.
Yeah. And I think you can't fake that. You can't, if you want to be the next someone, you're already on the wrong path because you're trying to replicate or you're trying to emulate something. We can be inspired by people. And I think we should be inspired by people, or whether or not we think we are inspired by people. But there's a difference between trying to emulate what they're doing and copycat somebody. And then there's and also do what you want to do and what you feel is right or what you personally gravitate towards. So there's a difference between being the next someone or just making your own way. You know, I call it just paving your own path. It might feel weird. You might have never seen that type of design or heard of, you know, we sell t-shirts and we sell leather wallets and leather mouse pads. Like, nobody was doing that. It just kind of was my own way that I've, whether it was the right or the wrong way, it's the way that I've paved for the brand, and it seems to be working out.
Now, have you dealt with any issues of people calling you out for saying, hey, you know, you stole my look, you stole my vibe, or I started that first, or anything like that?
It's usually the other way around. I usually have people ripping off a lot of my designs, which is silly just because there's the internet is a small place and people will recognize it. I get people, not so much as much recently, but there was for a good stretch where people were just literally ripping my designs almost exactly and then selling them on their own posters and shirts and things like that. But people see that and they're like, hey, that's Ugmonk's design. You can't be taking that. And there's been a few times where like some of the stuff is so simple. They say, you know, hey, we had an ampersand on this and you're using an ampersand in this, but there's some overlap in that. But it hasn't been really a big issue of me biting other people's style again, because I kind of made up my own style or my own aesthetic where, you know, I look to different places or I'm inspired by different types of design, but I was trying to be really cautious that I wasn't just like following a single brand and trying to basically follow every step that they took one step behind them.
So have you found yourself at all being tempted to want to go with the flow or being pulled out by the tide of a certain look or vibe? Because especially when you're dealing with something that like clothing and merchandise, it changes a lot. Like, I mean, it's always changing around and, you know, you can drop a dud and be like really, really, I mean, I'm just speaking for myself. You can drop a dud and be like, oh man, people like this. Maybe I should start doing that. Do you wrestle with that at all?
Yeah, I think it's definitely tempting to want to adapt or change when you see someone else maybe doing something that seems cooler than what you're doing, or, you know, it seems easy to be like, oh, I could shift into that kind of design style. But you know, I can't say that everything I'm doing is 100% original, because nothing that I'm doing, you know, everything's already been done and we're all reinterpreting different things or different, inspirations or things that we've absorbed through life and through the way we see things. But what I'm doing is trying to present my version of, you know, of what I want a messenger bag to look like. And did I invent a bag that you carry your laptop into work? No, I didn't invent that, but I wanted to put my unique spin, drawing from the past, drawing from things that I wanted in functionality and the way that it looked, the way that it felt, and then putting those into the Ugmonk version of whatever that thing is. So technically you could say, you know, I'm copying someone else because they also had a bag. It's like, you know, from a real common standpoint, sure, we're all copying each other because we're all, you know, we're all designing similar things. But at the same time, I'm trying to put my unique spin and my unique taste into every product that I make.
Right. So that makes sense to me. I mean, it is a fine line between inspiration and biting. It's a hard line to toe, because I think a lot of us, I remember when I first started drawing when I was a kid, I used to trace. I used to take trace paper and I would sit it over comic book pages and I would just trace it. You know, and from tracing turns into kind of just drawing from what you see, you look, you draw, you look, you draw, and then you're trying to draw from your mind. And I find that I'm regularly steeping myself in things. And as a result, I'm hugely influenced by all kinds of stuff, music, movies, you know, pick something, like even bad stuff inspires me, you know, like, someone was talking about, what's the tornado Sharknado, right? Yeah. And there's a level to where Sharknado is done well because it does what it's trying to do well. This is a bad movie. We know this is a bad movie. We're going to make the best bad movie there is. You know, we're intentionally making a horrible kind of like disaster action flick. And they did it well. And it's kind of like, there's something to kind of pick up from that. But am I going to go now make Spider-Nado? Like, I don't think that that's what we need to do. But there are people who are going to do that. That's what I'm saying. Like, someone's going to straight bite that success and go, we'll make one and we're going to put Hammerhead Sharknado, you know? Yeah. So, but it's a hard line to toe to be between I'm inspired by that, I can learn from that, I can grow from that, and I'm going to do it my way, or I'll just copy that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think what you talk about tracing drawings, even as an illustration for what that means, you know, tracing something, you're taking literally what someone else has done and copying it. And that's one of the best ways to learn. You take something, you copy it exactly the way you see it, and then you try and replicate it exactly the way you see it. But you're not taking those tracings and you're selling them and calling them, hey, I just invented Spider-Man.
Right.
No, you're saying, look, I'm emulating this person. Look how close I am to this. And you're giving credit to where credit is due. And then there's after you've learned something by tracing, by emulating people, copying exactly, you know, reading what the masters did, you take what that, and then you close the book, and then you create your own version of it, and then you can put your name on it and sell it. But there's like people like to say, you know, look how good I am. I followed this tutorial, this Photoshop thing, and look at my amazing, you know, finished piece of art. Well, no, you just followed the steps that someone else was teaching you. Now apply those steps to something new. Don't just follow someone else's thing and then call it your own.
So it seems like the takeaway for me, at least, is it's okay to learn. It's okay to be inspired. But I think the key is to apply what you've learned to something new.
Exactly. Yep.
Don't just take it and then redo it, but apply it in a different way, in a new way, add something to it, remove something from it, apply it to something that it's unconventional, not normally applied to.
Yes. And I think that's it's a small distinction, but it makes a humongous difference, as far as who gets the credit and where, you know, what that actually represents as far as the final output.
Yeah. So we're here now. We're here where UGMonk is, got an awesome website. We've got awesome products. We've got a following on social media. Are you doing speaking engagements?
I've done a few different design conferences, but that's not really a core to what I'm doing, just because I need to stay focused on the business itself.
Right. But I mean, but you're doing these things, you're doing collaborations with other brands and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Where is UGMonk going? Where's Jeff Sheldon going? Like, where is this headed in your mind?
If only I knew the answer.
Or where would you like to see it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, we definitely have a vision for where we want to go. And after doing this for over seven years, which is a long time to do anything, I didn't think I'd be here 2 years later. I didn't think I'd be doing it for a year. I didn't really think anything that I'd be doing this full time. But now that the brand has grown and matured and we've built relationships with our customers and given people an inside look at how I, you know, work and design and that whole, the UGMonk community that we've developed has allowed us to have more consistency. So when we put out new products, they could still be terrible, they could still flop, but we have a little bit better gauge on things. We're not just completely shooting in the dark. And what I want to do is not reinvent anything that we've done, but it's just to refine. So what I'm calling it this year is really a realign, and I'm going to be stripping back, kind of clearing out some of our product and focusing on the best of the best of the best. And then also stripping back anything that seems unknown, like how does Jeff do this? I want to peel back and show everyone, you know, how I'm doing things, what I'm learning, showing all my cards and just telling people this is how I'm running the business. And that connection and that transparency is something that I want to really emphasize and make it even more personal than it already is, as opposed to maybe polishing up the outside and making us look like a bigger brand or something that's going to, that, you know, to compete with the big guys. I want to kind of do the opposite. I want to just show you like, hey, I'm a guy that's passionate about design and making products. Here's how I'm doing it. And, you know, I hope you enjoy this.
Yeah. And I think that that's a very unique outlook on things, because a lot of people don't do that. They do the exact opposite. Why is that important to you, for you to, like you say, show your cards?
I think just that authenticity and transparency is what people want, because I mean, let's face it, there's a person on the other end of every single thing out there, whether it's something, you know, a product that was made overseas or that it was made here or that your grandma knitted. Like, there's people are involved in every aspect of things, but for some reason we like clouded them under this big umbrella and started you know, logos and brand names. And all of a sudden it became like, nobody wants to tell anyone how they're doing things or where their sources are. And I think people that can be a turnoff to people. They'd rather be like, oh, that's great. You're making your shirts in, you know, Peru. Well, I'm going to show you the factory that they're made in, as opposed to being like, yeah, we just outsourced this overseas because it's cheaper. Like, why not just show everyone that you're doing your homework and be real diligent with the details? And people respond well to that because they want to know those details. They don't want to feel like they're being ripped off, or they want to know, why would I pay $230 for a bag when I can go to Walmart and get one for $30? So,
yeah.
I mean, that's kind of my personal take on it and where I want to take things, because I think that people, especially our generation now, relates to things that are fully transparent. Here's what we're doing. You know, I'm working my hardest to make the best products and make them ethically and make them excellent. And here they are. You can support me by buying them.
Yeah, that's dope, man. That's awesome. Oh, I appreciate you sharing your story, man. I got one more question. I ask this to everybody. The whole purpose behind Bear Fruit is believe, create, inspire. Take what you believe, create something, inspire, circle of influence. So the real goal for Bear Fruit is inspiration. So a question I like to ask people is, when all is said and done, when Ugg Monk is a memory, is Jeff Sheldon is a memory, how do you want to inspire your circle of influence? What's the lasting effect you want to leave on those who you touch through personally or through your brand?
Yeah, I think I want to inspire people to do everything with excellence, whatever it is. But for specifically for what Ugg Monk is to create better things through better design. So that just means, you know, I call it a design-centered brand. And I think from the website to the packaging to the products, everything is the top priority, is creating a better experience through design and showing the power that design can have for a brand.
That's dope, man. That's awesome. Again, man, I really appreciate you taking time to talk to me. Why don't you tell the people where they can find you on the internet, find you on the social media outlets and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so everything's pretty much just Ugg Monk, UGMONK. My website's uggmonk.com. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, pretty much everywhere, and I have the same handle. So you can look me up there and learn more about my story on my website.
Awesome. If you want to follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and all that good stuff, it's Octavius A. Newman, OctaviusAnewman. This podcast is a product of Bear Fruit. You can follow Bear Fruit on social media. All social media is the same, at B3ARFRUIT. Our website, barefruit.com, B3ARFRUIT.com. And if you like this podcast, leave us 5 stars and a positive comment. Subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast with people you think be able to appreciate it. Share it with your friends. Talk to us on social media. Talk to us on Twitter. Let us know what you thought about it. Ask us questions and all that good stuff. And we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks for having me.